Hello, podcast listeners. Jordan River here. Thank you so much for tuning into GrowCast today. I've got so much exciting news to share with you. First of all, if you want to win 3 months free in our membership program, GrowPass, you can now do that by entering to win. Follow us on Instagram and check out our race to 3,333 followers. And it's free to enter, and you can win a free GrowPass membership program, which is perfect because this week is GrowPass week, everybody. That's right. We're going to be sharing some episodes from our member podcast at our membership site, mygrowpass.com. Usually it's me and Wolfman rapping or me and Travers rapping, but I'm going to share some guest episodes today because they're really, really great, and you guys are going to love them. And yeah, it'll give you a little taste of the program. You get the podcast, you get all sorts of discounts, exclusive discounts. You've heard about those. We're giving away prizes. It's really cool. So I just want to give you podcast listeners a little taste this week and show you some of the cool Grow content that we've been talking about over at GrowPass. Today's episode is with Stephen Raisner. Gotta love Stephen Raisner. This guy is awesome. If you haven't heard his podcast yet, Growing with Fishes, I demand that you go subscribe right now. It's incredible. He's truly one of the most all-around knowledgeable cannabis growers I've ever met. And his work in aquaponics is super fascinating and in microbial science. And you're going to hear all about it today. So I'm really excited for this episode. Before we jump in, let's give a little love to today's sponsor, Humble Garden Lenses, everybody. Just go to humblegarden.co. Promo code GrowCast gets you 15% off your lenses. And members of mygrowpass.com get 25% off. And they're giving away a bunch of filters to our listeners. You've seen these Humble Garden Lenses, everybody. That's right. If you are growing under HPS lights, it's really hard to take pictures because of that yellow light. Well, Humble Garden has solved that problem with their clip-on HPS smartphone filters. They attach easily to your phone and give you crisp, balanced photos that showcase your garden the way it was meant to be seen. And like I said, our listeners get 15% off at humblegarden.co with promo code GrowCast. You got to get one of these guys. It's way, way easier to showcase your garden. And it's just a better way to go. Humble Garden Lenses. Every HPS grower needs one. Humblegarden.co, everybody. All right. I guess without further ado, let's jump into this awesome GrowPass episode. Thank you all so much for listening. Enjoy the show. We're here with Stephen Raisner from Growing with Fishes and from aquaponic growing and just killing it in the cannabis industry. How you doing, Stephen?
Good, how are you?
Excellent, man. Thanks for having me on your show, Growing with Fishes. Love what you're doing over there.
Yeah, man, I appreciate it. It was good having you on. It was fun. It's always a lot of fun when you have other podcasters on because their perspective is so much different. I know the last time we, you know, it was really fun having you on and talking about shop learning. And it's always fun. I feel like the podcasters are almost always a little bit more engaging because they're used to asking the questions all the time. So the conversations end up being very in-depth and they end up being very good episodes. So it was really fun to have you.
It's cool, man. I feel like the show's going well. Everyone go check it out. If you're listening to this and you're going to love Growing with Fishes, check out my episode, check out all the episodes because it's really awesome. But yeah, man, I'm stoked to talk to you. If you listeners haven't heard our last episode, I really, really enjoyed diving deep into aquaponics with Stephen. But you also just know a lot about growing, man. So today I kind of want to focus more on growing and some high leverage grow strategies to help the audience just grow better cannabis. You down?
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's always a good time. We ended up getting into some pretty cool topics. When you were on the show, I believe it was episode 163, if memory serves me right, last week. So it was a lot of fun. Last Thursday, I think it was.
I'm loving it, man. And, you know, I just said we're going to dive right into the grow strategies, but I actually had a more generalized question that I wanted to ask you in the world of aquaponics kind of relates here. You're doing all sorts of consultation work. You're all over the place. You're traveling. What grow styles do you feel are trending right now? Are more people hopping on board with aquaponics? I see a lot of people switching to super soils. What's trending?
I think the real big trends right now, one, aquaponics is exploding. And I mean, as a percentage of market share in the total market, it's still minuscule. I'll be the first person to say that. But you're seeing ridiculous terpenes profiles coming out of almost all the aquaponic producers. Once those guys get them dialed in, they're off to the races and they're, you know, crushing a lot of the, 70, 75% of the soil guys out there with Wow. terpene profiles. It's not even comparable. And then the other one is that, the soil and the other, the one exception to that soil would be living soils. So living soils, the probiotic farming, pro-microbial farming, work people like Elaine Ingham, Chris Trump, those types of people, Dragonfly Earth Medicine, can't speak highly enough about them and all the amazing education that they put out. Those are kind of their methodologies, along with, and a large part of that is thanks to, Joshua Rutherford and Leighton Morrison, that for putting on the Science of Regenerative Cannabis conferences and bringing those communities together. Mm-hmm. But you're really seeing those, kind of taking the forefront, because those solutions with the living soils offer ways to handle a lot of the problems that you traditionally cannot solve now that we have hardcore pesticide regulations and everything else. And I'll give you a great example of this, is that you're seeing right now, especially in hemp producers across the United States, Septoria. I can't go on a hemp forum right now and see one without seeing someone at plants don't have Septoria. So you know why people are getting Septoria in a lot of these first-time hemp growers?
What's that?
Because they're growing on cornfields that haven't had, they've been spraying petrochemicals. They haven't been using any microbiotics. They're putting broadleaf killer, weed killers, and all kinds of crazy shit down. I can't curse on this. I apologize.
Yeah, you can. You can curse on this, down, man, but go ahead. Yeah.
All kinds of crazy stuff down, and it's killing all the microbiology, and then it's allowing things like Septoria or Fusarium or Botrytis or some of these other issues to really get a hold in that soil and live year after year after year on whatever crops are there. And then they come in with cannabis, which is extremely sensitive to some of these and really resistant to others, and it just has a field day. So we've even seen in my personal experience in Oklahoma, even one or two applications of probiotics, it almost stops it in its tracks and prevents that from being an actual thing that's going to kill the plant. I know one of the fields out here that I was working with, it wasn't one I was managing, but one came to me because they ran into the Septoria and didn't know what it was. And I had spoken to him up here locally at one of the grow shops. And I told him, hey, hit it with Bacillus subtilis, Bacillus pumilus, Streptomyces, with that combo, because it won't over dominate your soil. Like Trichoderma can over dominate. It will absolutely solve the problem, but it can kind of crowd out some of your other beneficials and be a little too dominant. And you can use it. It should be used as a last resort, but you're not seeing, because of that, those probiotic farming is a way that I can now treat something like that and still pass fungals at the end of the end of the testing, or if I'm making concentrates, I'm not getting a residue that's going to become a concentrate and become a problem either. Which again, Oklahoma, we starting on the 29th of August, everything has to be tested now. We've been testing everything since day one because we're a reputable company, but most of the people out here aren't, are a large percentage of them aren't, or haven't. Now they have to, and you're going to see a lot of people failing on fungals. Particularly fungals is going to be real rampant.
Wow. Yeah, man. I love talking to you about your work in Oklahoma and just your consultation work in general. Really interesting stuff. You said there was a bad flood out there, right?
Oh yeah. And that's probably the source of a lot of the Septoria outbreak, is we've had the whole Midwest and central part of the country, Tennessee, Kentucky, Oklahoma, Texas, Missouri, Kansas, Arkansas, they all got heavy, heavy, heavy rain this spring. I know it rained when I moved out here. I think it rained for a straight month. I know one day we had 6 separate tornado warnings for our house. Like, jeez. That was in one day.
God damn, man.
Like, it was crazy.
I remember, I'm not going to go on a tangent, okay? But I remember speaking to a woman from Chicago, and she was telling me how she was never going to move to California because of the earthquakes out there. And I was like, the earthquakes? Are you kidding me? You guys get tornadoes here. It's way scarier. Like, just tearing neighborhoods up. Earthquakes being, few and far between and usually harmless. But yeah, you got to be careful in that tornado alley, man. Jesus Christ.
What scares me more than even the tornadoes or the earthquakes, because I've done both of those already, is the fires. Having to flee your house in 2 or 3 minutes, that was the thing I think that's ever shook me up the most out of all the natural disasters.
Like a natural disaster magnet?
Oh yeah, dude. I dealt with the floods in Colorado that were the biggest floods that had ever happened there. We had a big flash flood in Jamaica that washed out the road where our farm was. I mean, I've had all kinds of, we had a hurricane that we dealt with down there. I was working on a farm down in Puerto Rico, one of the first people to get licensed for cannabis. That farm got completely destroyed when Hurricane Maria came through. They had shipping containers around the outside for security that were bolted to the concrete pad. It ripped those bolts right off, like severed them like someone cut them with a sawzall or a torch, and then rolled the shipping containers through the greenhouses, leveling everything.
Jesus. That's crazy. That's some Michael Bay shit.
It looked like Godzilla came and went bowling with our shipping containers.
Man, that is nuts. Man, I would love to speak with you more on your travels. Let's do that sometime. You have some stories. Yeah, we were talking off air, but anyways. Oh, yeah. Anyways, let's do grow tips. Let's do grow talk. You know, it ties well in with your consulting. What do you see growers doing that they could be doing better? You know, you do a lot of really beginner consulting stuff. So I'm sure you see a lot of egregious stuff. You've in fact described to me some pretty egregious stuff at high scale operations, but I want to talk about mistakes that even more experienced growers are making, you know, oversights they're having where they could really be improving their game.
I would say, and this is one that even like I sometimes I wish I do more of even is that especially when you're putting plants out in the beginning of the year, hitting them heavily with, especially for outdoor, an outdoor where you're in these more humid areas, especially like the south and central part of the country, is just hitting them with probiotics and making sure you're getting out there and hitting them with your compost teas or your particular microbes to prevent these things from getting established in the first place. And then even doing it in your initial soil mix in the beginning, like not way before the plants and roots are ever even in there, you know, getting that active and in there and defending everything way beforehand. Same thing with nematodes. You know, you can put them in when you're doing your initial soil mixing, you're blending in the beginning of the year. You know, they'll still live in that soil the whole rest of the year. You know, that it's a great thing for you to, you know, do and get handled ahead of time. And that's really something I think that people could do and save themselves a lot of hassle and a lot of, you know, especially fungal prevention, I think would go a long way towards doing that. And even, you know, tractor spraying, if you're doing field hemp and hitting it with probiotic stuff, you know, particularly labs and then some of the, you know, Bacillus subtilis being the two that I think really make a huge difference. And then to a lesser extent, IMOs, like liquid IMO would be probably number three in that.
Well, I was going to save this for later, talking about specific products, but, you know, aside from the microorganisms themselves, can we talk brand names here? I mean, I know Mammoth Pea is a really big brand name. Wolfman is a big fan of the Microbe Life line, Photosynthesis Plus, products like that. We're partnered with Fish Shit. What do you like as far as microbial products?
Sure. So I did testing on two of the three products you just mentioned when I worked at the aquaponics source. And we actually tested Mammoth Pea all the way up to 10% of the aquarium water and had no negative impacts on the fish, and the plants did just fine as well. A Mammoth Pea has been one of the best phosphorus chelating microbial inoculants we've ever found for aquaponic systems. And it is now being used in, you know, most serious commercial operations in the United States in their mineralization process.
And that phosphorus chelation is why it's so effective in flowering.
Oh yeah. And it really, especially when we're working with organic nutrient sources like fish waste, or if you're doing compost teas, it really does boost that, you know, noticeably where I'm testing PPM levels every 2 weeks, like what we're doing with the aquaponics, you know, it makes a noticeable difference. I can chart it on a, you know, it's one of the only things we ever tested in the lab at aquaponics source. That and the other one, the other two that we ever had that made a noticeable difference in tissue samples was Recharge from the guys over at Dugros.
Sure.
And then Transport by Optic Foliar. And when we combined that with minerals for foliar feeding, was the only thing that really increased tissue PPMs by any serious thing. So all the testing I did, we at the aquaponics source, we had three separate systems. Each of them were around 650 gallons, and we did side-by-side comparisons, and then we'd send in the water samples and then tissue samples for basil, tomatoes, lettuce, and sometimes we do other crops as well, depending on the run. And we were able to do lots of different tissue sampling and testing with all kinds of different products because people wanted to know, hey, can I market this for aquaponics, or can we not market this for aquaponics? It was one of the services we provided, so we were always doing this kind of internal testing, and that's where a lot of my you know, information and knowledge came from is a lot of the stuff that they were doing.
That's really
at least
cool.
In the beginning.
So you stand behind Mammoth Pea, especially for the phosphorus benefits and the yield. But when you're talking about these early stage microbials, what do you like to use there? Something closer to like a compost tea or an FFJ or whatever it's called?
Oh yeah, I mean, if I'm brewing my own, I'm a big fan of IMO. You know, 1 through 4, depending on what you're doing. If you're familiar with KNF, liquid IMO would be another good one. Labs. I have a really good YouTube series on different ways to make labs. You know, if you're stuck in the middle of the, say, for example, if you're stuck in the middle of Philadelphia, where I grew up, it's not probably a good idea for me to try and gather labs. You know, if I live on like a row home, you know, how am I supposed to collect labs without getting a bunch of who the hell knows what into that sample? It's just not gonna happen. Mm-hmm. So you can go to your local drugstore and go to the probiotic section, or go ask the pharmacist. They'll generally have a refrigerator in the back for probiotics after people take heavy antibiotics. It's not prescription. It's just in a fridge behind the counter. And they'll sell you those. And you can pour that right in a gallon of milk, put it on the counter and wait 3 days and you'll have labs. Like, you don't have to, like, you don't have to go crazy and pull your hair out, and you don't have to go, you know, and to the middle of nowhere forest to get some super zen labs from, you know, the air in, you know, northern Alberta. You could absolutely do something as simple as go to your drugstore. Absolutely. And when I say that, I mean, like, they're not identical, right? So like the one you'd get from the drugstore will still do a lot of plant beneficial stuff. But if I was going to do something for long-term no-till soil type stuff, yeah, I'm going to probably do something more traditional, the way that Chris teaches it. But, and he's got a YouTube series on that.
That's the KNF. You're talking about the Korean National Farm, Korean natural farming, not national farming, and the indigenous microorganisms, the IMO.
Yeah, no, Korean National Farming is what they do in North Korea.
No, those practices are less fun.
Actually, funny enough, I actually was given some seeds from North Korea a couple of weeks ago.
No shit. Keep us up to date on that, man.
From North Korea.
Well, what can you tell us? Even if it's alleged, it's still allegedly interesting.
They allegedly came from missionaries.
Wow, man. So open to that.
But there are missionaries that are also stoners. So
maybe if we got them stoned, maybe if we got Kim Jong-un stoned, he wouldn't be such an asshole.
There you go.
Yeah.
Someone send that man some dabs.
Oh man,
send Dennis Rodman over with an e-rig.
Totally, he'd be the one to do it. Just got to shotgun him. Surprise!
Dennis Rodman,
boom.
Dennis Rodman and a Puffco.
Love it. Love talking to you, man. but let's talk products. Is there anything else you add? I mean, you seem. It's not even that you add, because I know you do aquaponic growing and you do all this different growing, but sure. Do you have any other products that you recommend people try in their grows? Like, it seems like you're all about the natural stuff, the super soil.
Sure.
I mean,
so I do. I'm a big fan of FPJs and very particular FPJs. So I guess the first one to come to mind would be horsetail. Horsetail ferment is amazing as long as you can get the horsetail from a low heavy metal area. It is a really, really good source of silica.
Oh wow.
That it can be really, really good for fast acting silica. And comfrey, fermented comfrey. Comfrey is another really good plant booster. I'm also a huge big fan of do like a labs, but when you make your labs, add spirulina and kelp extract, and you can get a ton of auxins, and they stabilize pretty well in that lower pH. Rapid acting, so you know, as plant growth boosters, so you can make like your own organic PGRs and organic versions of a lot of the synthetics that people love to use for different purposes they're used to using, you know, because they're stuck on the baby bottles still. But you can use those things. I mean, look at Patrick from Soil King. He has a great Excel sheet on his website on all the different nutrient sources from all these different natural things. I believe we have it reposted on the Aquaponic Cannabis group on Facebook as well, but it's a great resource that he put out there that, you know, if you're looking for, hey, what should I ferment to get X, Y, and Z, or hey, nutrients are in elevated levels to particular crops, his Excel sheet that he's put together is really one of the best resources that's out there.
Nice.
If you're looking for a cheat sheet. on plants for XYZ nutrients is what I, or the basis of what I've added some stuff to it now, but it's where I got started at least.
And what does your fermentation process look like? Do you just do like the brown sugar style? Do you have any like tips or, you know, any tricks you've picked up over the years?
Entirely depends on what it is that I'm doing. I'm going to do labs a little bit different. Do an FPJ. So I'm a big fan of sugar for ferments. But if I'm going to do like IMOs, with the one exception being like IMO2, seems to work a little bit better with molasses than sugar. Was IMO 2 or 3? I think it was 2. Sorry, blanked out on that one for a minute. Smoked some really good rosin right before the podcast.
Oh, I'm jealous, man. It's that Oklahoma rosin. I love it.
Actually, yeah, I was blown away to find some bubble rosin. Went out to dinner and there's a dispensary next door and popped my head in and they actually had some nice bubble rosin and live bubble rosin for $120 a gram. I was like, yeah,
Jesus,
I like rosin. I don't like rosin that
Christ. Much. Holy cow.
Bubble rosin is going for 90 a gram now. Regular rosin is 60 a gram. So bubble hash, gram of bubble hash, are getting $60 in Oklahoma, which to me was kind of completely fucking insane because you can get bubble for $7 to $8 a gram in Colorado.
Totally.
So I don't understand how there's that much of a, like, I still don't understand, but there's no trim. Like, and nothing's cured. Like none of the stuff that's for sale, not none, but the vast majority of stuff that's sold to dispensaries, not cured. You almost have to cure it yourself.
So is it just right off the line, fresh and dry, but still uneven as far as the moisture quantity within the nuggets?
Yeah. I mean, it still smells like grass. It doesn't have its smell yet. A lot of times. Like, so we have a dispensary down in Glenpool and Kind Alternative, and 95%+ of the stuff that comes through the door is not something we want to put on the shelf because people come in all every day. We probably get 3 to 8 people trying to sell us stuff.
All right, before we jump back in with Stephen Reisner, let's give a little love to today's sponsor, the amazing Dr. Zymes, everybody. Just go to drzymes.com, drzymes.com. Promo code GROWCAST10 gets you 10% off your entire order. And members of mygrowpass.com get 25% off their pest control, and they're giving away a bunch to our listeners. So cool. To our members, that is. The amazing Dr. Zymes Eliminator is a revolutionary green solution that kills and eliminates soft body insects, molds, and mildews on your indoor and outdoor garden. It's a proprietary formula. And listen, this is incredible, guys. There's no residue left by this stuff, okay? This is enzyme pest control. This is not pesticide chemicals. It does not show up on any tests. It leaves no residue. It's completely OMRI listed and organic. It is a perfect part of your IPM strategy. So you got to check it out today and check out their enzyme multipurpose cleaner. Also very useful around the garden. DrZymes.com, promo code GROWCAST10 for 10% off. And MyGrowPass.com when you're ready to save 25% off of your grow's pest control, everybody. All right, let's get back to Stephen Reisner. Yeah, well, let's talk about that, man. Let's talk about quality. Let's talk about growing quality cannabis. Do you have any advice for my growers? I mean, the synthetic growers might recommend a product, but I'm looking for more grow strategies here. Do you play around with like low temps or any like late harvest stressors or just any advice for quality cannabis?
Absolutely. I would say you want to maximize the microbial diversity as much as possible in your system with ways that are not going to be pathogenic or ways that are going to try and heavily compete with each other. The more ways that you can stimulate that plant's immune system, the more terpene production you're going to get, the more terpene diversity, and the more gene activation you're going to get on that terpene expression. A lot of those terpenes are actually activated by the presence, at least of a detectable level as far as the plant's concerned, of pathogens. We had Mike West on the show a couple weeks ago. And actually, he told me this first when I was in Vancouver back in January at Lift Expo and the Regenerative Conference how there was he left the name of the event out, but there was a cannabis event, and they noticed that all of the ones that were failing for fungal, for PM, were super high in CBL. And they realized there's these whole group of cannabinoids that are only produced in high quantities in the presence of pathogens. So you very well may in the future have a cannabinoid that is extremely medically beneficial that you will induce production or maximize production of by putting PM in the room.
Whoa.
And then running it as distillate in order to maximize the gram production of that. And that
actually is like fascinating.
Or something similar to that with a different pathogen or even a non, you know, destructive or human issue pathogen. So there's this whole like we've only been looking at profiles of healthy plants. There's this whole other half of the plant, or maybe even two-thirds of the plant's genome expression that only happens when the plant's having serious problems, but that could have a whole host of cannabinoids that are only formed in that scenario that could have their own, you know, medical impact that could be groundbreaking. And that no one's even, you know, it wasn't until last year anyone even thought of that.
That's wild, man. That's like a fine, dried Italian salami. It's like moldy to the point of perfection.
Right.
Or wild.
Or corn smut, right? Or blue cheese. You know, like there's lots of ways we do this in other parts of our diet.
I'm not sure what corn smut is. That sounds like some sort of vegetable pornography.
Yes, yes. It's when they kill the corn at the end.
Kill the corn at the end. That's corn snuff. That's different.
Oh, corn. corn snuff, yeah. No, corn smut is a fungus that is very expensive that is intentionally introduced to corn, and the fungus grows on the kernels, and it is very strong flavor. You have to be into it, but it is a very gourmet, high-end thing, but it's done, you know, as a part of a normal production process. So again, you know, if CBL ended up being a wonder drug because for XYZ, you know, I don't know, whatever, for the sake of argument, who the hell knows? That could become a normal practice where you just keep PM on hand, and when the plant's, you know, week two of flower, you introduce it to boost your CBL levels, and then you're not ever going to smoke that flower. It's not made for that. You know, that's never the intention. Mm-hmm. But again, that's kind of some of the weird future of cannabis that people aren't really looking at right now. And if they think, again, this is just going back to the original point, is if you want to maximize the flavor of your cannabis, you want to maximize the diversity of the root system and foliar, you know, to lesser extent foliar, but definitely the root system. And that's one of the reasons why aquaponics really excels, but you can absolutely do that in soil. You know, make sure you're doing your IMOs, make sure you're doing your CANA, make sure you're doing your other microbial inoculants. And even in low doses, just to stimulate those genomes and those genes in that plant to get that terpene expression activated and going, and you'll make a world of difference and really get extra flavors and stronger flavors out of your cannabis. You had also mentioned about temperature swings. Now, temperature swings are interesting. So temperature swings are going to make a big impact for color, but they're only going to make a big impact for color if the plant can produce enough anthocyanin. And the problem is that people know that. That's a common thing. That's nothing new. I'm sure it's probably even been brought up on your show before. But the way people hamstring themselves is they run their molybdenum too low. Now, in my opinion, a lot of the molybdenum PPM recommendations that have been put out there are too low for cannabis, especially in these super heavy feeding indicas. They will suck it down. I've seen it happen in aquaponics where I've been testing it week after week in the water. They'll suck that molybdenum down, especially if you have more nitrates than ammonia in your root system, you know, depending on the quality of your soil. And the amount of the different versions of nitrogen, the plant has to have so much of molybdenum to convert that nitrate back to ammonia or nitrite back to ammonia inside its own plant tissue, or it can't do that. But it also uses molybdenum for anthocyanin production, a lot of the enzymes that it needs for anthocyanin. So if you do not have enough molybdenum, the plant won't process enough nitrogen, so it'll stay green. Or you know it won't turn quite as well, and then it also won't make enough anthocyanin because it's limited on that production as well. So you're hitting it in two separate ways that you're reducing that purple from coming out that you want for sales appeal. So by boosting that molybdenum up to 0.5 ppms or even 1 ppm, you're still way below toxicity, but you're giving that plant like all it could ever want. The plant's going to self-regulate with molybdenum. You can burn them with it, but you're not going to do it at 1 ppm in a liquid solution or, you know, adjust appropriately for your soil solutions. And it really will make those plants really pop. Your purples will be purpler, they'll be blacker, they'll be darker. Your pinks and purples will be more vibrant. With that really, really helps them with the sales appeal. As long as you're doing everything else right, and you're giving it a little bit of a temperature turn. Also, you know, switching to an 11-13 instead of a 12-12 will also help with that a little bit more on the color as well, at least in side-by-sides that I've.
Man, that's some mind-blowing stuff there. Molybdenum contributing to coloration. So I think my listeners will love that. What are your favorite inputs for molybdenum?
Sodium molybdenate is probably the easiest one. It's one of the only times I'll ever recommend sodium anything to people. And I've also seen this in lettuce. I've seen this in red producers, like red lettuce and aquaponics, like in just DWC, you know, plain Jane aquaponic systems. People were not having proper reds popping out. I've also seen that with magnesium causing where they have real uniform lettuce. And this can happen in cannabis too. If you have real uniform seed production and all of a sudden you're getting like just plants misbehaving or you get a really weird mutant or, you know, suddenly it decides it wants to be a different phenotype all of a sudden and it's pretty uniform seed. Super low magnesium and then combined with really low molybdenum seems to cause a lot of mutation with those red producers in lettuce in particular. I've seen that more times than I can count. I can walk in and look at the thing and go, oh, you're off on this and this. But I've also seen it where a molybdenum has been stripped out so badly because they ran nitrates super high, you know, above 120 ppms for months at a time. They stripped out every last bit of molybdenum and all the lettuce suddenly looks nitrogen efficient because the plant cannot convert the nitrate back to ammonia because there's not enough molybdenum to make the enzymes do that.
So fascinating, man. Yeah. Since we're on the topic of color, I want to run by a kind of, I don't know if it's a theory or a hypothesis or just an interesting thing that someone said on my show. They were talking about plants with copper deficiencies and the wild color expression that comes from copper deficiencies. And this was a non-cannabis grower. He's kind of a soil guy. And he was like, why don't you guys just find some way to make the plant copper deficient really, really late and get these really awesome colors? I thought that was interesting. What do you think of that?
Well, copper plays a huge role in flower structure development. So I would be really worried about screwing up my flower structure and really hurting my yields.
No good way to do it late, like suddenly after... You know, the majority of the phase, like if there was such a method.
I couldn't think of, you'd have to do it that suddenly, you'd almost have to lock it out somehow.
And then
inside
that would be excess.
Which to do that in a way that's not going to grossly negative. I mean, I'm sure someone could invent a way. Ask Colin. Colin, if anyone knows the answer to that, it's probably Colin Bell. but
I'm certainly not like recommending its effectiveness. But when he said that, I was like, huh? Because people are really after some of these colors, and these copper deficient plants can have all sorts of nutty reds and, you know, pinks.
You know, it was funny. So we did a bunch of work trying to replicate some pretty peculiar nutrient deficiencies that people were claiming to have in the lab. Some of these nutrient deficiencies to strip out like just copper or just manganese, like try to go find a picture of a cannabis plant that is solely deficient in manganese or solely deficient in copper.
Yeah, good
or
point.
Solely deficient in molybdenum. The likelihood of that, you have to do it in a lab.
Good point.
Like, you can't do it in another scenario. You know, it's not really possible. So unless you're just totally off the wall bad at growing, which I'm sure someone's done before, but it's one of those things where it's so hard to replicate to even study, and from a chemistry standpoint, to get the plant to grow to a certain point and then do that and then make sure it's so devoid in the plant tissue that it's not just using what it's already stored.
Not very,
because the plants will store, you know, a certain percentage of what they need for the next few days or few weeks or next stage of development, depending on what nutrient is inside their own tissue, you know, sometimes the roots, or sometimes they'll also store them in these little fatty nodules. I was talking about this with Chris. I can't remember the name, but they make these little fatty nodules. They'll store you know, energy and sometimes nutrients, sometimes fats, sometimes whatever, but they'll store them in those as well. But again, it's so tricky to try and cause something like that without grossly screwing the plant up in some other way. And then, okay, so we figured out a way to do that. Is that safe to smoke now?
Well, like, that was the question, like, because obviously if it was a toxicity, you'd be super worried. But if it was a deficiency, you wouldn't imagine that it would have any health effects from something not being there. But that could be a foolish assumption.
Well, it's like there's a guy, where was it, MG BizCon or Emerald Cup last year, one or the other, that was said he had some spray and you could take a plant, cut it down, spray it, and it would be cured in 2 days. And I'm like, I want to smoke that.
No,
like,
way. I don't care what. Oh my God, is. I remember that product. That. Wolfman, like, talked about that.
Give me cancer.
He said the same thing. Oh, that's so funny. That's so funny. Oh man.
Like, I'm not saying his product does. It's not an accusation on that. You know, like, I don't want to get sued, but
no, we're just joking around. Me and you get into some trouble, you know, man. We're always joking.
That's the kind of stuff that scares me, you know, like,
I see what you're saying.
We have this plant that doesn't hurt anybody. Let's not go in that direction. It's like CBN isolates. Like, please, if you're in the industry, don't make a CBN isolate and put it on the market. You're going to get us all in trouble.
Right. Yeah, I'm right there with you. And I'm just, I don't mean to just blow smoke constantly, but I'm really stoked to talk to you because of all the crazy shit you do, man. You're always like around like consulting and involving yourself in different cultures and laws. And you're really in it. I'm glad that there's someone out there doing shit like testing plant deficiencies and purposefully fucking up plants and studying it, because who else is going to do that? Someone, that's a dirty job, but someone's got to do it.
Well, absolutely. And a lot of that was just working in their nutrient lab at aquaponics stores trying, and a lot of that was just, okay, how can we make a new, like, we're trying to fine tune this nutrient product, we're pretty sure it works, but we need to make sure it works, and we need to make sure it works on these crops, so we're going to repeat that a couple of times until we know, and then get the dosing right, so that, like, we were testing, okay, well, we added 500 grams of, you know, potassium sulfate, right? And we know that the plant is, you know, in the tissue, it's currently 40 ppm deficient. So we added 500 grams to 600 gallons of water, and now it raised the plant tissue after 2 weeks to, you know, 20 ppm higher, but we still need to add another 500. You know, no one had any of those dosing tables at all for aquaponics. And to be honest with you, most people still don't have. A lot of people still are stuck in aquaponics on feed the fish, magic happens, and the plants grow. Well, there's more to the chemistry than that. Silica would be a great example of that. Silica in aquaponics and in soil as well will increase yields, dramatically reduce mold and fungal infections, increase the gene expression specifically of the genes responsible for fending off fungal infection, which has been well documented in both corn and soybeans, but cannabis has that same gene too. And you know, so this is stuff that we can look at other crops that have already had this and extrapolate that information. Granted, it's not a one-to-one, but we know that there's, you know, if it's heavily documented and we see it in the testing data, you know, until someone can, you know, until the feds change their mind, we can't put it through a proper research anyway, at least not in this country. So
yeah, man.
It gives us a way to try and see through some of this stuff. But we've also increased shelf stability of lettuce up to 7 more days by increasing silica in lettuce producers.
Yeah, I know, so you're big into silica right now. I mean, I'm sure you always have. But when I brought something up to you, I think it was before our last show, you were like, I'm stoked on silica right now. So
always.
Always.
That's silica cool. Is one of those ones where just, I don't like, pH up for aquaponics, people tell you potassium hydroxide or carbonate and calcium carbonate, most people, or calcium hydroxide. Those are wrong. It should be calcium carbonate. You need the carbonates for microbial replication, and potassium silicate. And that gives you four separate nutrients, your carbon, your calcium, your potassium, and your silica, instead of, you know, the hydroxides, which are only adding two nutrients. You know, the hydrogen in water, oh yeah, that's beneficial. A lot of this comes from hydro guys coming into aquaponics and being like, oh, well, this is how it needs to be because this is hydro. Well, that's cool, but this isn't hydro. We're dealing with heavy microbial loads, and traditional hydroponics doesn't account for the microbial factor in their chemistry, and that changes a lot. That's where a lot of the traditional aquaponic information is just flat out wrong. It has been wrong 30 years. and it just needs to be fixed. You know, now that we're, and I'll be honest with you, a lot of it was hanging out with the soil guys, hanging out with, learning about Jeff Lowenfeld, Chris Trump, and Elaine Ingham, and applying their methodologies to the aquatic microbiome and That's aquatic so cool. soil. And just taking that, and it works. And it just really made a night and day difference and dramatically improved both vegetable and cannabis production all around.
I think that's really cool, man. And I think that aquaponics presents a really special facet, which is the self-contained part of it, right? So just really quick, before we swing back around and talk about organic growing and yield, just so I don't lose my place. Everyone loves the super soil grower benefits as far as the conservation goes, right? You know what I mean? That's just the talk of the town. And God bless them for doing that and saving the world and everything. But aquaponics, I feel like, is the real non-dead-end technology. And what I mean by that is if you can just figure out the power thing, it's like a fully contained, self-sustainable, poverty-solving, hunger-solving system. If we can just get around the energy, I think people will get hung up on the energy, right?
Yeah, so I've actually worked with some stuff both in Jamaica, and I've consulted on some stuff in Africa on vegetable production. And, you know, the biggest issue when you're trying to do something like in a humanitarian thing is the fact that you need to have chelated iron. You got to be importing that or generating it on site, which can be tricky. And that's really the one big hang up or the drawback. But yeah, everything else is great because you can provide meat and vegetables on a much smaller footprint. You can also produce, for about a half an acre of greenhouse, maybe a little less than half an acre of greenhouse, you can produce almost 6 acres worth of food, equivalent to 6 acres of soil.
Jesus Christ. Right.
So it's not even, it's just ridiculous. Right. And you're producing protein at the same time.
Right. And you can produce the hemp with the natural materials and the cannabis with the medicinal properties. So my point is, I think that like aquaponics might have the brightest future of all these. And I think that it doesn't get the same love that the soil growers get who are, reusing their soils and, never hurting nobody.
Oh yeah.
Sun growing sort of thing.
Absolutely. And we don't have any runoff either. All of our water stays on, which can be a problem on certain large soil grows.
That's a good point.
Totally zero runoff. So we don't have that local impact on local streams that, not all farmers have, but some farmers definitely do, depending on landscape, but with proper landscape design, you can mitigate those issues as well. Not saying that has to be part of the issue, but with the aquaponics, again, we're seeing increased terpene expressions, boosts in things like THCV, elevated CBD levels, elevated THC levels compared to, controls. We've only ever had one strain that ever didn't come up higher in CBD. We've had as much as an 18% increase in THCV with certain methodologies in aquaponics, which is insane. But yeah. There's no one else that I've never seen. Like, we've had strains come in, north of 15% terpene, which I have labs through SC Labs in California. Same guys that do Emerald Cup. So it's not we're not paying some hole in the wall lab. It's a legit, company.
Right.
So just really wild stuff that you're not seeing yet in the soil. And again, why is that happening? Because we have aquatic microbes and terrestrial microbes both stimulating that plant's immune system, increasing the maximum amount of ways that plant's immune system is going to wake up and try to produce different terpenes to fend off different things, even though maybe it's just stimulating it and not attacking the plant, but it still gets that immune system going. And that really, again, that's kind of what I was going back before earlier, is we can do that with the dual root zone setup. You can do that in soil just by diversifying your microbes more.
It's all about the diversity. And, it kind of ties back to a lot of stuff that I'm learning about health. A lot of these allergy experts in the field of health are completely reversing what they've been saying, which is keep your kids away from peanuts until they're like 3 or whatever. And now they're saying, make sure to give them peanuts. I mean, this is a switch that's literally happening right now. You're going to see it happen over the next few years. Experts in the field of allergies are going to change their tune and say, you need to give your kids the stuff, the hard stuff early, to build up their strength. Yeah.
Yep,
so it makes perfect sense.
And with that too, I'm glad you brought up allergies. A lot of people that think they're allergic to cannabis are actually allergic to a terpene that's in it. And there's a lot of documentation. People know a lot of terpenes that people are allergic to. Lots of people are allergic to grapefruit, mangoes, bananas.
That is interesting.
We could go down a lot. Lemons, you know, citrus, seafood. You know,
yeah,
things are found in cannabis, or you know, have a similar compound in cannabis that can set people off. Maybe not seafood, but certainly the lemonine. I worked for a guy that was putting a farm up that was deathly allergic to lemonine. Loved cannabis, couldn't smoke anything that had lemonine in it.
That's nuts. I just spoke with Jason Lupoy from Terpenes and Testing, and that's exactly what he was saying, is that some people are allergic to lemonine, and that you got to get a handle on this stuff, because it can actually, like, this is serious stuff.
Right, but bud tenders need to be aware of that. I've never heard of bud tenders tell me that. Like,
yeah, good
have
point.
You ever heard a bud tender that knew about terpene allergies? Like,
no.
But that's something that's like, this is important point of sale consumer health stuff that, you know, needs to be addressed, but we don't have any testing for any of this stuff because it's all federally legal. You know, you can't do any research on this type of stuff, but it's important. And you can even have some, imagine if you're a cancer patient and you're suddenly, you know, you think you get told you have 2 weeks to live. So you go to the store and you buy a syringe and take, you know, you wash the thing online, says take a gram the first day. The hell's going to happen to you if you just took a gram of something that had lemonine in it? You're deathly allergic, you know? You'll be the first guy that died of weed on the news, you know, and they'll make a big deal of it.
Good point.
Even though it was never the weed at all, it was the lemonine, you know?
And that's why we really need to dig in this stuff more. And I'm interested in things like CHS as well. And that's a whole nother topic, but I'm so fascinated to see where that goes, hyperemesis and all that. But
just had somebody call me with that and ask me about the symptoms of it. And you can tell if you have true hyperemesis syndrome because hot water is the only thing that works.
Right, that's what I've
heard. Whereas if it's azadirachtin poisoning will not respond to the hot water.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking to get an expert on the show. We've been working on it for a while. It seems like they're few and far between. So stay tuned for that, everybody. But
let me know if you find one. I've looked pretty hard too, and there's lots of like different information from people that claim, you know, some of them are even doctors, but
just piecemeal anecdotes. Yeah, 100%.
We can't science behind it.
We can't find a doctor who comes out, and we can't yet, but hopefully we will soon. So we got people digging in on it. Stay tuned for that, listeners. I wanted to touch on something you said earlier, though. It was about yield and it was about organic growing. And listen to that negative connotation I had with that downward slope. What do you say to people who say that organic growing, you know, it doesn't provide as much yield? And do you have any advice for organic growers to get more yield?
Yeah, I think the reason why people say that is just because they're used to, you know, plastic hardened PGR filled nugs that are feel like rocks. You know, that's not what cannabis is supposed to be. Not only that, like, good luck growing that in Oklahoma with 75% average humidity and not getting fusarium. Like, not going to happen.
Oh, wow.
You have to grow that indoor. Like, think about it. You need an airier, more fluff, like slightly more, you know, breathable bud. You don't want those hard nugs, those big, massive. I would never grow like God bud or some of those like super ultra chunky ones that are or Hulk or Bruce Banner, like that I could get away with growing in Colorado because the humidity is too high. They just rot
from the
inside.
They would
never make it to harvest. So it's choosing the right cultivar for your climate would be number one. Or for your climate, you know, if you're doing climate control, then making sure you have something that's going to do well and that, you know, whatever your climate control is set to. But that would be number one. And then it doesn't matter if it's organic or non-organic, that's going to be a big thing. And then, you know, again, like we talked about earlier, you can make some organic, there are organic PGRs, you know, the one I was talking about with the labs plus spirulina plus kelp extract, that's a great organic PGR that accelerate and get you some bigger buds. You know, you don't have to go to synthetic ones. There's all these organic ones that are perfectly fine that you can use to replace the stuff that you're used to using and doing that. But organic, I haven't seen the big reduction in yield. I mean, I've been growing organic now since 2012. You know, maybe we use one or two inputs that aren't certified or Almery certified, but it's a mined thing. You know, if it comes out of the ground and it's mined, that's organic. You know what I mean? This is crazy.
Yeah, and that's what I hear a lot.
Dug with a certified organic shovel, like, I don't care.
Yeah. That's what I hear a lot from organic growers, though, is that they didn't lose that much at all.
Oh, not at all. They switched. The flavor difference will just be, you'll never go back. The terpene levels are just, forget it.
Forget it. Oh man, I love it.
Strongest cultivar I smoked last year was from Dragonfly Earth Medicine. It was 16%, and it got me so high I could barely talk.
That's what I'm saying, man. It's about the balance. It's not about that THC number.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And that's why I'll go in a dispensary and I pick the weed that smells the strangest. It has a terpene profile, I don't know, or a weird combo. Like we have our Durban Sunshine that we have growing right now smells like hickory smoked barbecue. It's the weirdest terpene profile I've ever smelled on a live plant, but it smells genuinely like hickory smoked barbecue. It's the weirdest, but it's weed and it smells like barbecue.
Right. Or were you the one that was telling me about the one that smelled like onions or I don't know. I had someone on recently, the onion strain, and that's fascinating stuff, man. I love hearing stuff like that.
We were talking about tips too. Stem rub, like somewhere on your plant, you know, if you're really looking, like every couple of days, every 3 to 5 days, and you'll learn when that plant starts to come in, and you'll even smell like an evolution of those terpenes as they evolve and turn in, you know, go from monoterpenes to more complex terpenes and sort of combining, and you can learn more about what your plant's capable of producing. That and taking and doing, you know, like an 8-bag bubble set and chopping that up into all your different trichome sizes and then smoking those or pressing them and smoking them. And you'll really get that, especially if you're trying to enter into a big cup. You really want to make, you know, you have it down to your 2 or 3 good strains, chopping them girls up into that kind of way and then testing all the different layers of its flavor profile. It's like taking a song and breaking down all the tracks and studying them individually. You know, it's that same kind of way. You're going to get a way better analysis on an orchestra if you're looking at all the different ones, you know, looking at all of them as a whole, but then also individually as well. And you know, if you're trying to pick between like the symphony orchestra or the London orchestra or the Philadelphia orchestra or this, you know, wherever, who should I pick for my wedding? Like that's how you would go about evaluating. Yeah.
That's really cool, man. I like that analogy. It's good stuff, man. We should probably wrap it up here. Do you have any final words? I feel like this was a really informative interview. You're welcome back anytime. Any final advice to growers out there? Microbes? Yeah, is the answer microbes?
I would just say try to expose yourself.
I would just say microbes. Sorry, go ahead. Sorry.
I would say just to try to expose yourself to a bunch of gross stuff that's outside of your normal stuff. Like if you've been doing stuff a lot hardcore and I haven't been checking out KNF, check that out. If you haven't checked out the Slow Food Web stuff, check that out. You know, they're yins and yangs to each other. You know, they're not, one's not better than the other. They both work. They both mineralize stuff. You know, in nature, you have anaerobic microbes. If you're not doing one, you know, you're not doing, you know, you're not doing both and you're not doing, you know, the whole piece of the puzzle, you're not reaching the full potential of those plants. So just again, learning more about, you know, different grow methodologies, and then go out to your local rose club, your cactus group, your orchid group, your little old lady gardening club. They'll teach you really cool stuff. I know I've picked up so many cool things at Longwood Gardens when I used to live back east, going to the gardening clubs there. And then in Denver Botanical Gardens, they had all different types of groups. And I go to all different types of seminars, topiary seminars, bonsai seminars. I always picked up something cool that I could apply to cannabis. Some of them were like I learned about root trimming my clones and root pruning those. And that made a huge difference on week two, once we post-transplant on increasing plant growth. So just by trimming the very tips of the biggest roots off and getting rid of that root inhibiting hormone. And that was something I learned from a bonsai guy. So, you know, this is, you know, you'll learn really cool the tricks where they figured out one little niche of this plant, you know, growth stuff out that cannabis growers are just, again, like we talked about with the terpene stuff, with the infecting them with mold, like people, it's just so different and weird that people didn't think to do it, you know? So,
totally.
But there's grow methodologies that are just like this. So again, expose yourself to as much different types of gardening, you know, listen to some other gardening podcasts that aren't cannabis, and you'll learn really cool stuff. It can really boost your garden in ways that you never imagined.
I like that, man. Great advice, everyone out there. I think it's a good strategy to adopt, a good mindset to go through life with. And you know what you should check out first? Growing with Fishes, Stephen Reisner's show. Go check it out, everybody. Stephen, thank you so much for doing this, man. This was awesome.
Thank you. And for those of you guys who want to check that out, it's Growing with Fishes on all the different podcast apps, iTunes, SoundCloud, all the different places. And then we also do live on YouTube every Tuesday and Thursday on the Potent Products YouTube channel.
Potent Ponics YouTube. So now when you were given all, you were talking about your videos, all your instructionals, that's on Potent Ponics on YouTube, right?
Yep. And then we're, can I plug my upcoming class or is that
you can plug whatever you want, man.
Okay. Marty Wydell and I, AP Meds, our original co-host and still co-host of the Growing the Fishes podcast. And I will be teaching a 4-day in-person commercial cannabis training class, aquaponic cannabis training class in Old Hill, Oregon. October 17th through 20th. If you're interested, definitely come check us out. We're going to work on getting an online version of that as well. And we'll have a live stream and then we'll have a better edited version up, you know, available for access later on that people can get onto. And you can check that out at apmjclass.com. And then we also have a huge community we've been building for 4 years called Aquaponic Cannabis Growers on Facebook. If you want to learn more about just aquaponic cannabis growing or people that are growing, you know, really cool, weird crops in aquaponics and really pushing the chemistry. We're always having cool, you know, jam outs on different things and topics and, you know, bringing up different ideas and problems and all different types of Excel sheets and tables and stuff. If you're looking for reference material, we have on there as well. It's a really good community and a great place if you're looking for more information.
Love it, man. Love it. Everyone check it out. One more time, man. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, my friend. And anytime, you're always welcome on our show as well. And always a really good time talking to you. Always have a blast.
Hell yeah, man. I'll be there. Sounds great. Everyone listening, thank you so much. We'll see you next time on the Grow Pass Member Podcast. All right, that's the show, everybody. Thank you so much for listening. If you want more of the Grow Pass Member Podcast, go to mygrowpass.com and take a look at all of our package options today. You can get in for less than $1 a day and get discounts and more of what you heard today and, you know, the 5 mistakes that growers make in their grow series. Check it out, everybody, mygrowpass.com. Special thanks to Jay Blanked on this beat for the ad music. Check out Jay Blanked on SoundCloud and everywhere else. Shout out to Start2Finish710 on Instagram. Start2Finish710 for all your consultation needs. All right, everybody, that's it. Thank you all so much for being listeners. I love each and every one of you. Best of luck and happy growing.